Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. Well, I hope everyone is enjoying their summer, and certainly no better time than to read a beautiful essay written by Mary Schmeich, the very talented Tribune writer. And she writes, entitled, Summer Puts a Big Question Right Out There. The days are long now. The early birds wake you up at some insane hour, yakking away like drunks staggering home from an all-night party. You could get up then, too, with the morning light just creeping in and the world still in a lull except for the noisy birds and the air conditioners of neighbors who like summer at the temperature of a morgue. You could get up and put all this extra light to use. Study, garden, bike, bake, run, all before 8 a.m. Seize the rays. Or you could just lie there and watch the slow illumination of the room and think about how to spend these few long days that will never come again. Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? Those are the final lines of a poem someone gave me one day last winter. It's by Mary Oliver and called The Summer Day. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I have been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? There's more to the poem, but it's those final lines that get stuck in your head like chewing gum in your hair, that knock on your mind with the force of a dare. So, sucker, what exactly are you going to do with one wild and precious life? Good luck getting that thought out of your head now that it's been planted. What you're going to do with your one life is a question for all seasons. But it squeezes you in a particular way on these days when there are 15 hours and more from sunup to sundown with the bonus light of dawn and dusk on either end. Time and light are related. If you live in a place that's often cold and dark, you don't have to be an Einstein to know that. In places like Chicago, the gift of light feels like the gift of hours. Light does not age, I read recently. The line referred to the theory of relativity, and I'm not sure what it means scientifically, but the poetry of it feels true. Light does not age. The long days this time of year create the illusion that time has slowed down, been stretched, looped back on itself, restored some part of yourself that seemed gone. The extra light feels like an extended warranty on life. Every summer, I write down and occasionally write about my summer to-do list. Every summer, the list is a contest between idleness and industry. To-do? Walk before breakfast, walk after dinner, read for pleasure before breakfast, and after dinner. Eat outside for breakfast, dinner, lunch. Find a beach, eat blueberries, watch the shadows in the trees. Do more of everything good, do less of everything else, do more of nothing. And the thing not to do? Rush. When the days are long, the nights are different too, and they invite you to act differently. A few nights ago, a couple of my friends went out. It was late, way too late for people their age to be embarking on the evening, but when the days are long, the night can seem young even when it's not. They were strolling around their neighborhood when a man rode up on a bicycle. He had a chair on the back and offered them a ride. They rolled through Chicago in the warm night like emperors in a rickshaw, seeing the place they live from a different angle, at a different speed. That's the kind of thing worth doing with your one wild and precious life. So consider this your summer challenge. And if you needed more incentive, here's this. The days are starting to get shorter. From Mary Schmeek, summer puts the big question right out there. And that big question comes from a poem by the very talented Mary Oliver, which I'd like to share. And this is the entire poem from her book, New and Selected Poems. The summer day. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean, the one who has flung herself out of the grass, the one who is eating sugar out of my hand, who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down, who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I've been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? The Summer Day by Mary Oliver. That's a big question. Not only for summers, though, right? We have a very special show today because our very first guest is a man we've enjoyed his work with his group, the Association, for many years, Jim Yester. And we thought we'd start out by playing a couple of the Association's greatest hits. The first one they ever had, Along Comes Mary, followed up by one of my favorites, Everything That Touches You. And we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
Kids are flung across the stars. The psychodramas and the traumas gone, the song that I've been singing. my most secure moments, I still can't believe I'm spending those moments with you. And the ground I am walking, the air that I breathe, are shared at those moments with you. In love for you, you show the
two of the great songs by the Association. Their first big hit along comes Mary Sung by Jimmy Esther, and again, one of my favorites, Everything That Touches You. We're back on the Kevin Moore Show. One of the fun things about hosting my radio show is having the opportunity of making the acquaintance of some very interesting, talented, and fascinating people, and our first very special guest is just such a person. He's a man who's spoken to us through his music for many years. We're all familiar with his songs because they become standards that speak to each of us and just simply touch our hearts. Memorable songs like the ones we just heard, the Association's first hit, Along Comes Mary, sung by Jimmy Esther, and Everything That Touches You. The mega hits Windy, Time for Living, and No Fair at All. And the classic songs that I and many others consider two of the most beautiful love songs of all time, Cherish and Never My Love. For legendary singer and songwriter Jimmy Esther and the Association, making people feel good is primary to his illustrious career. Singer, songwriter, music producer, gifted musician, and member of the Vocal Group Hall of Fame, Jimmy Esther and the Association can claim they defined a generation. A man whose distinctive vocal and musical virtuosity not only sets the standard, but also defines the essence of excellence in music and song that spans generations. Jimmy Esther with his iconic group, The Association, will be appearing at the Metropolis Performing Arts Center, 111 West Campbell Street in downtown Arlington Heights, on Friday, September 12th at 8 o'clock. It's both a joy and an honor to welcome the award-winning performer, Mr. Jimmy Esther. Jim, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Oh, thank you so much, Kevin. My gosh, such an intro.
Well, very well deserved for somebody who's in a Hall of Fame. I have to put something together like that for you. Well, it's great to certainly talk with you. We talked yesterday a little bit, and always enjoyed and still continue to enjoy, as do, I would say, millions of other people, the music of the Association.
Well, listen, especially in the Chicago area. Chicago was really our second home. It was really our home away from home. We spent so much time there, and just we absolutely love that area. I think the Astor Towers, I think, is all in our blood.
Really? I didn't realize you spent time in Chicago.
Oh, yeah. Every summer, we would fly to Chicago, and we'd hole up in a hotel, and every day we would drive out like 300 or 400 miles this way, 400 miles that way, and just come back. We would spend weeks in Chicago. Just love it.
Did you enjoy the travel then, Jim, or do you still enjoy it now?
Oh, absolutely. That's one of the really neat things about doing what we do. This is such an amazing country, and there's so many great places. And gosh, we got to see so much of it. I mean, we played in every state, and most of them, you know, hundreds of times. It's just fantastic.
And overseas also. I mean, you were a big group in Japan.
Yeah, unfortunately, the whole group never got over there.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. We did a European tour in 68, and we never went back there. It was a little probably short-sighted on management's part. They thought we couldn't make money over there, but we've talked to people, you know, afterwards that says, geez, you guys established the beachhead, and then you never came back.
Well, your music still's over there, that's for sure.
Well, that's... You know, much appreciated, for sure.
How did it all start, Jim? How did the group come together?
It was one of those weird situations. It's kind of divine intervention. There's a club in Hollywood called the Troubadour.
Sure, yeah.
And it was a huge mecca for the folk scene back then.
Mm-hmm.
And every Monday night they would have what now is called Open Mic Night. That then was called Hootenanny. And every Monday, there was a bunch of guys who were either in between groups or in other groups or just looking to get situated that would go, and they would hang out together. They all kind of knew each other, and they'd harass whoever was, whatever on stage. And sometimes they would get up themselves and call themselves the inner tubes. And sometimes there'd be four or five guys, and sometimes like 12 or 13 guys.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one night it was like 13 guys. And it was kind of a magic moment, and the owner of the club said, anybody who wants to consider this for real, meet in the office tomorrow. And they did, and that became a group called The Men.
The Men, yeah.
And they all wore denims, like, work groups,
Sure.
Work gang. And it was mostly acoustic, but it was also electric and had drums and was the first group dubbed folk rock.
Mm-hmm.
And they stirred up quite a bit of dust in L.A. But about 6 months into it, there were too many guys, too many egos and complexes, and it kind of split apart one afternoon. And the core of that group went over to Terry Kirkman's apartment, and that day became the Association.
Really? It's amazing how simple it was, but what great music came from it.
And, the thing that made it so unique is six guys, all with different musical tastes, and everybody, lending a direction, and everybody had input, and, it wasn't so-and-so in the Association. It was everybody had input, and, that's what made it so varied.
And guys from all over the country, different cultures and so forth, and come together with a common denominator, that common denominator being the love of music.
Indeed it was. And, how it got the name was Terry's girlfriend was looking up, there was a terrible old showbiz joke called the Aristocrats, and the group called themselves the Aristocrats.
Right.
And she was looking up that name or that word in the dictionary and came across Association, which is a group of individuals united towards a common goal, and that was it. It stuck.
And it was kind of a California rock. It was a feel-good rock. Your first album was Along Comes the Association with the great hit, your first big hit, which was Along Comes Mary, which you sang.
Yeah, I tell you, that was quite a wonderful roller coaster ride, getting that first hit record. I remember the first time we heard it on the radio, We were on the freeway, about four or five of us going over into Santa Monica, and we're all hanging out the windows and screaming. And it was a great moment.
And there was great music on that. Of course, Cherish was another one of the great songs, one, as I said in the introduction, one of the great love songs of all time.
Yeah, and that's, I'm surprised at how well that has lasted, especially the love songs, Cherish and Never My Love. Cherish, we didn't even select it as one of the first five tunes that we recorded. We thought, well, it was a great album cut, and boy, it sure surprised us. We were getting ready to release Enter the Young, and a DJ in Ohio pulled Cherish off of the album and started playing it, and it went right up the charts, and the record company said, whoa, boys, let's think about this.
Now, Terry Kirkman wrote that.
Terry Kirkman, yeah, Terry's very, very prolific, and wrote that as well as Everything That Touches You, Requiem for the Masses.
Sure.
Wrote some great stuff.
Is Terry still around?
Yeah, Terry's still around. He retired in 84, and oddly enough, became a substance abuse counselor.
Huh.
And I always crack up by saying, you know, what a excellent training to be in a rock and roll band.
But, you know, we kidded about it yesterday, Jimmy, and a lot of guys retire, but inevitably they all come back to the association.
Yeah, I left in 83. I was gone for a long time. I did a year with a Love and Spoonful when they reunited, and 14 years with the New Four Preps. And but I always, you know, stayed in touch with the guys, and eventually they said, hey, you know, what are you doing? We need help. We don't have a tenor. So, I came back. I've been back about seven, eight years now, just having a great time.
Where did you get your interest in music? Had you played when you were a young man learning in school and so forth?
Well, the first thing I learned was harmonica, you know, walking to school, playing mm-hmm. the harmonica. But my dad was a professional. He was a piano player,
really?
Taught accordion, and actually arranged a whole series of books for accordion that became the standard of the industry. Everybody's favorites, and for the accordion, arranged by Larry Yester, and that for years and years was like the standard of the industry for accordion students.
And your brother was in the music business also, Jerry, correct?
Yeah, he and I started together as mm-hmm. a folk duo in the L.A. area, and we were managed by Mutt Cohen, the guy who owned the Unicorn on Sunset Boulevard. And we worked there, and he would send us out to all the other clubs, the Rouge and Noir in Seal Beach, and the Satire in Southgate. And that's where Jerry and I met Larry Ramos.
Okay.
He sat in. We were doing shows that night, and he sat in between two of our shows and did a guest shot. He kind of ran the Hootenannies down there.
Uh-huh.
And that was, in fact, Larry says we were the first folk act he ever saw.
And, of course, Larry's daughter does such a great job promoting the association,
yeah.
Tracy, which we had had the opportunity of chatting
guy.
With. And we lost Larry a couple months ago. What a great guy.
Yeah, in April. It was, you know, very sad. But, unfortunately, the last couple of years he got sicker and sicker, so... In a way, it was, you know, a blessed relief that no more suffering. But, we definitely miss him. He was a great guy and an incredible musician, songwriter, and we'll still do his stuff, you know, forever. And, like I said, we all miss him a ton. And, fortunately, his daughter, Tracy, is still doing stuff for us, runs our website, and keeps us all on our toes. And just a great gal to have in the group.
Well, Larry's legacy will live on in his music as you continue to play, and hope that's for a long time. Now, your second album was Renaissance, and one of my favorite songs that I was mentioning, we were talking yesterday again, No Fair at All, you wrote that. What a beautiful song that is.
Oh, thank you so much. And oddly enough, we had my younger brother Jerry produce that album. And he's always apologizing for it. He says, oh, God, I was so green. But, you know, a lot of people tell us that was their favorite album.
Oh, that's a great album.
I love, stuff that he did, especially like with No Fur at All. And oddly enough, you know, that was the number one song in the Philippines in 67.
Oh, really?
And we never found out till 84. We went over to play the Philippines, and the people asked us, you know, to do our number one song over there. We had no idea.
Well, I have to remember the words. Let me think about that. And wasn't there was another one on there? Angeline. Angeline was on the Renaissance.
That's Terry Kirkman.
Right. Yeah. Well, we're going to take
the best Don Barber imitation.
Well, we're going to take a little break here and play a little music, and we'll be back on the Kevin Moore Show talking with Jim Yester of the Association. Well, we're back talking with Jim Yester of the Association. We're talking about Renaissance, Jim, and Inside Out was the album after that. And things kind of got, with that and Birthday, kind of became what, a little psychedelic? You were going in a little different direction?
Well, you know, the Enders theory was changing. The culture was changing
at
the time. There was what an exciting time to be in the music business. And, everything was changing up. And also we had switch producers. We wound up with Bones Howe. We were the first group that he produced, and it was just a really a wonderful pairing, and we were able to get into some things that were, you know, very creative. And also for the Inside Out album, we had the talents of Clark Burrows, the top tenor for the Hi-Los.
Sure.
He was the vocal arranger for that album.
Really?
He did some amazing stuff. Never My Love, of course, was, you know, Clark's touch on that. Absolutely, it was just monumental. And, that was those two albums were a great time in our career. And, you know, at that time, it just, we were moving so fast, it was hard to make time for recording. It's just there was so much going on and so much touring. But, that was a great time recording those two albums.
Well, Never My Love, written by Andreese, wasn't it?
Dick and Don Andreese,
yeah.
Two brothers who were staff writers for our first record company, Valiant Records.
Mm-hmm.
They were staff writers, and we called them Frick and Frack. Four of us lived together over in Hollywood, and the other two guys were married, so they lived elsewhere. But we rehearsed also where the four of us lived, and we'd be rehearsing sometimes. There'd be a knock at the door. We'd open it up, and here'd be Dick and Don Andreese sitting on the porch, one behind the other, and using the guitar as an oar and, like, rowing their way into the house. Wow, we got a great song for you. You got to hear this. I mean, they were Tin Pan Alley to the max, just wonderful guys, and wrote great stuff. Never My Love, Happiness Is.
Oh, sure.
Go Blame the Rain on the first album. Just great, great songs.
And, of course, then came Windy, which was a great song written by Ruth Ann Friedman. And doing some research on Ruth, she was quite a character during that time.
Oh, she was a great gal. She was actually, we called her our den mother.
Yeah.
For a while, she slept on the couch in the living room where four of us lived. And she had gone up to San Francisco one weekend and came back. And she said, most of her stuff was real avant-garde. We did another one of hers. It was very far out, but I don't think the record company was ready for it. But she came back. She said, "I wrote something like very commercial, very contemporary." And she sat down on the kitchen floor and with her guitar and played us Windy. And we were getting ready to go into that album. We said, "Oh, that's kind of cool." So we took it and played it for Bones, and he said, "Woo, I've got an idea for that." And boy, that thing came together so fast. As soon as the track was done, everybody went, "Whoa, wait a minute, what is this?"
Who was it about, Jimmy?
Actually, it was about a guy originally, a guy in San Francisco, kind of a free spirit.
Okay.
That just, you know, tripping down the street, you know, loved everybody.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
And she says, "Well, just change the words, you know, to make it about a girl."
Yeah.
And That's what we did.
Well, it works pretty good.
Yeah, it works all right.
Now, who are some of your pals that during that time that you used to hang around with or contemporaries that you enjoyed working with?
Well, there were lots of guys. Of course, you know, my brother at that time was in a group called the Modern Folk
Quartet. Oh, sure, yeah, yeah.
The MFQ. Now, they became a rock band in about 65, and they were playing L.A., and everybody would go and hang out and watch them. Everybody went to school on them. And, you know, when they would play at the Trip on Sunset Boulevard, the whole audience would be musicians.
Really?
Musicians and, of course, a lot of ladies. And everybody went to school on them, and everybody made it, and they didn't. You know, it was so bizarre. But, you know, them, and, of course, we, you know, everybody knew that McGuinn was a friend. There were a lot of the L.A. groups, the Canned Heat. Our drummer Ted Luschel went to school with what's his name, Height, Bob Height, I think his name is, was a lead singer in that group.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the guys, we all hung out at places like the Troubadour and the Trip and the Gazzari's and L.A. the folk music. I mean the a lot of us came out of the folk music scene, but everybody was gravitating towards the rock thing. And we all, it was kind of a community. There was a lot of camaraderie and not so much competition as much as camaraderie.
You know, I had the opportunity having Mike Love and the Beach Boys on my show a couple times, chatting with him. And I asked him, I said, Mike, what was it like growing up in California in the 50s and the 60s? He said, Kevin, it's a time and place that will never be duplicated. And what you're talking about probably was the same thing. That time and place, that feeling, that spirit of music at the time where everybody's striving to put together and make beautiful music, that might never happen again in its wholesomeness, maybe. Maybe that's the best way to portray it.
Yeah, I think that's the right word, wholesomeness. I mean, it was certainly a kinder, gentler time.
Yeah.
That's for sure. But, yeah, and it was, you know, and it's funny, you should bring up Mike Love. A girlfriend I had at that time, her roommate was going with Mike Love, was dating Mike Love.
Mm-hmm.
And, so we ran into each other quite often. But, yeah, we, you know, hung with the Beach Boys, Terry and their leader Brian,
yeah.
We're very good friends for a lot of times, and we played together with them in Las Vegas, the Ventura County Fairgrounds, and it was really a neat time.
And of course, then around 1969 came a collaboration with a composer who was familiar with television music like Love American Style, The Wide World of Sports, Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, and who wrote the great Grammy Award-winning song Killing Me Softly, sung by Roberta Flack. That was Charles Fox. And you guys collaborated and did the soundtrack for Goodbye Columbus.
Yeah, actually, we didn't collaborate with Charles, per se. In fact, I don't think we met him until afterwards.
Really?
What they commissioned us to do music for the movie. In fact, we went to their office in New York and watched what they call the rushes, the shootings, but without the music track. And they said, okay, we want music. We want a song here. We want a song here. We want a song here. So go home and write. You've got a week. And so we went home and wrote furiously and then met with them again. And they said, okay, we'll take this one. We'll take this one. We'll take this one. And they selected, fortunately, the song I wrote, Goodbye Columbus, for the theme. And one that Larry wrote, You Gotta Be Real, for the love montage. And one that Terry wrote for the fade out at the end, You Were So Kind to Me.
Yeah, yeah.
And Larry always claimed that Charles Fox ripped off Goodbye Columbus for Love American Style.
There's a lot of similarity there. That's true. There is a lot of similarity there.
But, hey, that's just, you got to steal from the best.
and people have done that, just like the Modern Folk Quartet. That's true.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was Allie McGraw's first big hit, I think.
Yeah, Allie McGraw's first big hit.
Right.
Dick Benjamin,
right.
Jack Klugman. Really, really great movie and And anyway, Philip Roth, you know, Philip Roth book. Portnoy's Complaint.
Sure. Writing. Well, do you still enjoy traveling, still enjoy getting out and playing in front of the fans?
You know, I think we enjoy it more. We appreciate it more now.
Yeah,
but absolutely we do enjoy it. In fact, we got a whole bunch of stuff coming up in September. Like you said, we're going to be in Arlington Heights and Watsika, and just really looking forward to coming back to that area. And, yeah, really do enjoy it. And we're having so much fun with it now. Jules and I went through everything, and the guys that we have now, Larry's brother, and our original player, Brian Cole, his son Jordan, is our keyboard player.
Oh, wow, that's great.
And so it's still very much family, and just having a great time with it.
Well, I'm sure Russ will come back one of these days here.
And, we're definitely keeping in touch with Russ.
Well, you know, it's a joy to chat with you, Jimmy. With your iconic group, The Association, appearing at the Metropolis Performing Arts Center, 111 West Campbell Street in downtown Arlington Heights on Friday, September 12th at 8 o'clock. As I said before, it's been both a joy and an honor to spend some time chatting with you, and from myself and all our listeners, from all your fans. Jimmy, thanks for sharing your special and unique talents with all of us. You know, have a great summer. And, you know, if you ever want to talk about what's going on with the association, we have each other's number. We're on each other's radar. Let's keep in touch. I'll make sure I do that with Tracy. And, you know, just a joy chatting with you, talking about one of the great groups of all time.
Well, thank you so much. It's just my pleasure to be on your show. Thanks so much for having me.
Have a great rest of the summer.
You too.
Thanks, Jim. Jim Yester, one of the great singers and songwriters, producers, and just a great guy from the association. One of the great groups of the late 60s and early 70s, certainly a group that I've enjoyed so much. The great albums, Along Comes the Association, Inside Out, Renaissance, Never My Love, We Love Us, which is a great song, Windy, and on. So if you get an opportunity, go on YouTube and listen to them, enjoy them, or pick up their CDs, because just a great group of people. And they will be at the Metropolis Performing Arts Center in Arlington Heights, one of the great venues in the western suburbs, on Friday, September 12th at 8 o'clock, 111 West Campbell. Well, we're going to continue with some of the great music of the association. Their biggest and most timeless hit, Cherish. And we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
Cherish is the word I use to describe all the feeling that I have fighting here for you inside. You don't know how many times I wish that I had told you. You don't know how many times I wish that I could hold you. You don't know how many times I wish that I could mold you into someone who could cherish me as much as I cherish you. Perish is a word that more than a cherish as much as I do yours. Oh, I'm beginning to think that man has never found the words that could make you want me, that have the right amount of letters, just the right sound that could make you hear, make you see that you are driving me out of my mind. Could say I need you, but then you'd realize that I want you, just like a thousand other guys would say they love you, when all the rest of their lies, when all they wanted was to touch your face, your hands, and gaze into your eyes. Cherish me as much as I cherish you.
One of the most beautiful love songs of all time by the association Cherish. And we're back on The Kevin Moore Show. Fiddler on the Roof, the Tony Award-winning musical, will be presented by Light Opera Works at Kahn Auditorium in Evanston through August 24th in celebration of its 50th anniversary. Tevi is wrestling with the new customs of a younger generation is punctuated by an unforgettable score that weaves the haunting strains of Sunrise, Sunset, and the rousing If I Were a Rich Man, with the exuberant matchmaker, matchmaker, and the triumphant tradition. When his daughters choose suitors who defy his idea of a proper match, Tevye comes to realize, through a series of incidents that are at once comic and bittersweet, that his children will begin traditions of their own. At the story's close, the villagers of Anatevka are forced to leave their homes, and even the sturdy mores that have guided everyday life begin to crumble. Paradoxically, it is the enforced loss of the rigid traditions and home life that Tevye has tried so tenaciously to preserve that leads the family to reconcile and draw closer still. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning actor, having been seen on the stages most recently in Damn Yankees and Cabaret, six-time Jeff Award-recognized director and choreographer for such classics as Annie Get Your Gun, Man of La Mancha, My Fair Lady, South Pacific, and The Sound of Music, a longtime member of the Society of Stage Directors and Choreographers, one of the brightest stars in the world of Chicago theater, and the artistic director of Light Opera Works, now presenting their latest hit, the classic musical Fiddler on the Roof, through Sunday, August 24th at Kahn Auditorium, 600 Emerson Street in Evanston, Mr. Rudy Hogan Miller. Rudy, welcome back to The Kevin Moore Show.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Always great to have you, and certainly congratulations on and I say this without hesitation, another hit for Light Opera Works, which you seem to have one after another.
Well, we keep our fingers crossed.
Well, it's working.
Yeah, so far, so good.
You know, one of the great classics, Fiddler on the Roof, certainly a story, you know, written, 100 and more years ago by Shalom Aleichem, and a hit on Broadway, first Broadway musical to garner, I think, 3,000 performances.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
And Tevye, some of the great Tevyes that we enjoyed, Herschel Bernardi and Topol and Theodore Bacall and Leonard Nimoy, and a great story that's timeless, I think.
Right. Yeah, it is one of the best written musicals, and the way the like you said, a terrific story, and interweaves the music with the script so beautifully, you know.
Have you put this on before for Light Opera Works?
No, I have not. Yeah.
No. So what was the thinking behind it? I mean, it's a no-brainer, of course, putting one of this great musicals on, but how do you come upon choosing this particular musical?
My general manager actually she goes up to Stratford every year, and uh-huh. She's seen it at Stratford, and it is the 50th anniversary, and she was just seeing it, she was just reminded about how much people loved it, you know, and people were standing and cheering and crying, and brought the show back to her mind, and Light Opera had done it, I think, maybe 9 years ago,
uh-huh.
Something like that. So it just, you know, it just brought the show back to the front of her brain, you know, and mm-hmm. Then we started talking about it, and like you said, it is you can't deny it, it's one of the great ones, and it's nice to honor it with its 50th anniversary, and so that's how we came to choose it, you know.
Now, you've seen a movie musical, I'm sure, and certainly the musical on Broadway are presented in the theater. How do you tweak it yourself? How do you change it, or do you make sure that you are religiously putting it the same way that it's always been done?
Well, you do. It is one of those shows where technically when you license it, you are agreeing to the original concept,
right,
choreography and all that kind of stuff. And so I guess you have to decide if you're going to, you know, do what you're supposed to do or if you're not. You know, what you say. But, I mean, I've done the show myself as a performer 3 or 4 times, and so I know the show, and I have a great love for the show and its original concepts and choreography and such. And so, I wasn't interested in, you know, trying to reinvent
the
stamp on it. You know, I mean, come on, it's Jerome Robbins, for crying out loud. So then you always have the challenge of transcending that original stuff to your cast and making it fresh with them, and how does it live in their bodies, and of course we all make discoveries as we're in rehearsal, and you know, well, maybe we can't really do that particular moment, or we'll do something else, or you know, but we're not trying to veer too far from the path.
What characters did you play in it when you were in the play?
I was always a Russian dancer, or I was the fiddler.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, interesting story about the fiddler. Of course, that came from paintings by Marc Chagall, and he had a series of paintings of Eastern European life of fiddlers. Fiddlers being a metaphor for survival through tradition and joyfulness in a life of uncertainty and imbalance, which is reflective of really what Tevye is feeling in all these changes that he's seeing with his young girls and so forth. And he's looking at tradition and says, well, geez, wait, what happened to tradition here?
Right. The fiddler always appears and like is sort of saying, so what are you going to do, Tevye?
Right.
Oh, are we going to stick with tradition, or are we not? Are we going to bend it a little right now, you know? When we decided to do the show at Light Op Works, I had never done it with a fiddler that actually played the fiddle on stage. I mean, I pantomimed it myself, and I had never seen it with an actor really playing it. And the last time Light Op Works did it, they actually hired a musician. A regular, not an actor, but a musician to be on the stage to play the fiddle. So I thought, well, of course, okay, that makes sense. And in my mind, I'm thinking, well, probably originally on Broadway, the actor played the fiddle, I thought. That would make sense. But then once we got the books and for the show, and you have a lot more information that they're giving you in the manuals, we'll call them, it was quite clear that, no, it was always a pantomime.
Oh, really?
Production. Yeah, it was not played. And so when you're trying to honor some of the staging for that actor who is the fiddler, you really can't do some of that original stuff if you're going to play the fiddle, you know?
Sure.
It's a little difficult to do some of the moves. So that was an interesting, that was an interesting little hurdle we had in rehearsal, like, well, this is what you're supposed to do here, but I see you can't because you're actually playing the fiddle. You know? And then how much he plays in the show is, you know, like I said, if he's just originally when he's just pantomiming throughout, you can have him, you know, pantomiming all you want. But
sure,
if he's going to really play, then it's not really written out. It isn't the score what he plays, you know.
Hard to play a fiddle sitting on top of a house.
Yeah. So that was a little bit of a challenge, but I think we overcame that, and it certainly is. And I was lucky that I had an actor who sings and dances, who actually played the fiddle, who came in during the audition. So that was. I prefer that rather than just hiring a musician that not really is a performer, you know.
How has the response been from the audience?
It's been fantastic. It's just been amazing.
Yeah.
It's been great. People are loving it and appreciating it. And so far, all of our reviews have been good. So the phones are ringing. That's good.
You know, consider this a compliment, because I think there's two people in theater in Chicago that play in and play out, theater production in, theater production out, that have always hit it out of the park. And I think that's yourself and Jim Cordy, Light Opera Works, and what he's doing out of Paramount. I mean, you can always be assured of a quality production and a stimulating and engaging time in the theater.
Jim is an old friend of mine. We've worked together in shows, and he was in shows for me that I had choreographed years ago at Candlelight and such. And I know when I talked with him, actually, when he got that job at Paramount, that was, and they were just figuring out how they were going to do everything they were going to do, because it was all new. And that was one of the things he said. He said, I want an orchestra like Rudy has, you know?
Sure. So, well, it's very exciting, of course, and the exciting season coming up after Fiddler. Of course, you have Cole Porter's Greatest Hits, which is something to look forward to, which you're directing.
Right, yeah.
Now, what do we expect from that?
Well, we have four singers in that show, and I think we have three musicians. You know, we're at that Nichols Concert Hall, which is a smaller venue. And it's some of our light out. Jim Harms will be one of the actors, and Jim Rank. And Caitlin Spencer, who's new to us, she's playing Huddle in Fiddler right now.
Mm-hmm.
And who's my other gal? My mind.
Well, just as an aside, you talk about Jim Harms, of course, your partner for a long time. We had Jim on talking about when he was starring in The Man of La Mancha.
Uh-huh.
And I said to him, and I continue to say this, next to Richard Colley, I don't think there's anybody who personifies Don Quixote de la Mancha like Jim Harms does, and I say that very sincerely because he just does a terrific job in whatever he does, but I mean that role just made for him really was.
Yeah, it's a role he always loved and was, you know, got to finally do it and then did it like suddenly four times in a matter of a couple of years, you know. He loved playing that role But the Cole Porter will be. It's going to be exactly what it says. It's going to be the greatest hits. We're not doing any. We're not doing any obscure Cole Porter.
Good.
So hopefully, will be all the songs people love, and we're putting it together ourselves. You know, it's not an existing show.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be very much tailored to our people and their talents. And I'll kind of be creating it. You know, on the spot in rehearsal, really. I mean, I'll have an outline.
Uh-huh.
But that's the way those kind of things have worked out for us at that.
Well, it'll be like a cabaret show. It'll be fun.
Kind of.
Yeah.
A little more formal concert-like.
Sure.
You know, but...
And then The Merry Widow comes around Christmas time.
The Merry Widow, right, which was one of the first shows when I was hired at Light Opworks. That was in the first season. And I had... So I'm going to be doing that one the second time around. But same two leads, actually. Stacey Tappan was a wonderful operatic singer. She's worked at Lyric and all over the country. And Larry Adams, who you know, of course, is one of our great Chicago leading men. They both did it for me the last time. They're both coming back to do it again. And, it's nice to revisit, just like Fiddler, you know. I mean, I've done Fiddler several times. It's nice to revisit, have the opportunity to revisit these great shows and hopefully do them better than you did them the last time.
You know, I think that's a good point you bring up, Rudy. That's a responsibility I think we have because there's a whole new generation now that should be appreciating the classics of American theater, American musicals, young people that we should be bringing, whether it's our children or grandchildren and so forth, and introduce them to where our parents introduced us to this great musicals at one time.
Exactly. The other day when Bridget and I were doing our little curtain pitch before the show, I was mentioning The Merry Widow, and I said, it occurred to me, I said, you know, especially if there's any younger folks in the audience out there, you may not even know what an opera is,
right.
You know?
Sure.
So, here's one of the great ones, so come and see it, see what this art form is, and, you know, because it's true. I mean, I work with young people all the time, and, you know, not only do they do not know what an operetta is, I mean, some of these young folks... didn't even know Fiddler on the Roof, you know?
Sure. Well, I'll tell you a little story, a little personal story, a little aside. My youngest daughter got married a couple years ago, and, of course, when there's a special time at the wedding where the dad dances with the daughter, so it's my responsibility to pick the right song. So I think I'm going to pick a great song here, which means a lot to a dad and his daughter. So I chose Sunrise, Sunset from Fiddler on the Roof, one of the great songs, a beautiful song, beautiful love song. What better than Tevye thinking about his daughters or myself and so forth?
Sure.
So we have a great dance and so forth, and at the end, my daughter Shannon comes up to me and goes, you know, that's a nice song, Dad, but I was hoping you'd play the Beach Boys. I think, geez, one of the great love songs of all time. She wanted the Beach Boys, but there you have it, reality and a little skip in the generations there.
Yeah, there you have it.
But, you know, it's congratulations again on the great success, the Fiddler on the Roof, and certainly looking forward to Cole Porter and the Merry Widow after that. And I'm sure there's great things, more great things to be coming at the Light Opera Works.
Well, I hope so. We're trying to decide what we're doing for next season. We're working on it right now, so.
Well, I'm sure it'll be exciting. Winner of 10 Tony Awards, Fiddler on the Roof has captured the hearts of people across the globe. A powerful and bittersweet celebration of the human spirit. Fiddler on the Roof is the tale of a family struggling to maintain their balance in a changing world. It's 1905, on the eve of the Russian Revolution, and Tevye, a Jewish milkman, and his wife search for acceptable husbands for their three lively daughters. While the daughters are determined to break with tradition and marry the men they love, Tevye must choose between their happiness and his beloved traditions that keep the outside world at bay. Meanwhile, the family begins to face larger forces as Jews are being persecuted in their homeland, threatening the very life Tevye strives to preserve. Fiddler on the Roof, the Tony Award-winning musical, will be presented by Light Opera Works at Kahn Auditorium in Evanston through August 24th in celebration of its 50th anniversary. And on the line with us right now is the Artistic Director of Light Opera Works, Rudy Hogan-Miller. Rudy, maybe a phone number or website if people like to get some information?
Yes, well, our website, of course, is just lightoperaworks.com, or, and our phone number.
Let me see if I have it here at handy. I do. 847-920-5360 for tickets for Light Opera Works and all the great things to come. Would you give my best to Jim Harms, please?
I will, Kevin.
And always a pleasure, Rudy, and continued success.
Thank you very much. Best to you, too.
Thank you so much. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. I'd especially like to thank our guests, Jim Yester from the Association, one of the great groups of the 60s, continuing the legacy of great music that they started. We'll be performing in Arlington Heights, the Metropolis Performing Arts Center, September 12th at 7:30. For information, 847-577-2121. Delightful chatting with Jim and listening to some old stories about that great group. And Rudy Hogan-Miller, the Artistic Director of Light Opera Works, with his latest hit, and I say latest because the next one's coming up, I'm sure, Fiddler on the Roof, through August 24th at Kahn Auditorium, 600 Emerson Street in Evanston. For information, 847-920-5360. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought, every day at least, to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Have a great day.
You're sure your heart will fall apart each time you hear her name. I know the way I feel for you. It's now or never. The more I love, the more that I'm afraid. In your eyes I may not see forever. Forever. If we can be the best of lovers, yet be the best of friends. If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows, any luck then I suppose. The music say.